What is up, and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined, as always, with my two co-hosts, John Kegley and David Drogemeyer, three writers from San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and I also cover the Chargers for Sports Al Dente, an LA-based website covering just LA sports, and I cover the Chargers there as well. But this is our fourth season covering the Chargers, but our second with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. It is draft day, guys. One of the most exciting days of the year and the most exciting day of the offseason. The chance for the Chargers to get better without having to actually use a lot of their cap space on, because let's be honest, they don't have it to use. The Chargers get to pick tonight at 28, and we're here with you today to do the last little bit of our draft prospects, talking about some sleepers and some guys that can go in the later rounds. So first, we're going to talk about David's sleeper pick for today. That is Andy Isabella, the wide receiver out of the University of Massachusetts, UMass. Then we're going to get into John's sleeper, who is Ali Udo out of Elon, which sounds like Star Wars somehow, some way. That's just a ridiculous name to go to Elon. Ali out of Elon. We'll talk about in the second segment. And then we'll wrap things up with my sleeper, Cincinnati defensive tackle Cortez Broughton. So, David, I had each of us go out and pick a guy that we wanted to talk about that could slip into the later rounds and give you some good value. Tell me a little bit about Andy Isabella out of UMass.
So Andy Isabella out of UMass is a little bit of a smaller wide receiver, but man, can this guy fly. He is 5'8", about 185 pounds soaking wet on his best day. But the one thing that he brings to the ball yard every single day is pure, unadulterated speed. He runs a 4.3140, and it shows up on tape. He routinely gets separation. He has incredible straight line speed, not, you know, incredible quickness, but man, he's got good hands for a small guy, a bit of a body catcher, but he gets separation. He's pretty tough for his small size. He breaks tackles. He's good in the open field, and he's good for a couple of really good plays. And oh, by the way, he led all of college football last year in receiving yards, so the guy is productive.
Yeah, and I know you're thinking UMass, you know, not playing against other really good teams, blah, blah, blah. And you're probably right for the most part. But, I mean, you look at his game against Georgia, you know, a team out of the SEC, one of the big boys, and what he was able to do against them only last season, racking up 15 catches for 219 yards in two touchdowns against Georgia. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Yeah, 4.31 speed. He's definitely a slight guy. You would have some concerns about durability. But when he got hit, he always found a way to bounce back up. It's a different hits at the next level. But there's a lot of things that, like you said, Andy Isabella does well. I mean, you cannot teach speed. At pretty much every single game that I watched of him, he had a 50-plus yard touchdown. I mean, sometimes even, you know, catching it on the 10 and, you know, dragging defenders in there. He's not a guy that plays down to his size. He's a guy that plays a little bit bigger than his size is. And yes, he does. I mean, pretty much makes every catch. It is a little bit of a problem that he catches so much more with his body, but he does have a good understanding of zone concepts and, you know, knows how to find the soft spots and kind of sit down in a zone and wait for the ball to come his way and use that quick acceleration to get upfield. Not elite agility like we talked about, but he definitely made some guys miss out of in college. John, what did you see that you liked out of Andy Isabella?
That speed. Speed is amazing. That you could do anything with this guy. You could run a reverse with him. You can go wide receiver screen. You can go deep route. You could even maybe, if you can hit him in stride on a quick slant or even a drag route, like you could do so many things with him, and his speed will take care of the rest. If you do a wide receiver screen with him, he can hit one little hole and run towards the sideline and probably get 12 yards before getting touched once. I love all that about him. And as you said, it's really hard to teach speed. So the fact that he already has it just means there's one less thing you have to worry about.
Right, and I think he fits a role that you have been spending about $6 million a season to fill right now with Travis Benjamin. I mean, he can return punts. Andy also gives you that guy who can take the top off of a defense, which is, I think, partially the reason that you see them bring back a guy like Travis Benjamin this year. There are some faults in his game, and realistically, you might not get this guy a value because lately he's been shooting up draft boards, and I've seen him get taken in mocks as high as the third round. So he's not as much of a little-known product anymore. He's definitely – his stock is on the rise. But there are definitely concerns. You know, is he going to be a big impact player as far as run blocking? No, he tries, but he could definitely get stacked up by bigger receivers and have trouble, you know, really affecting guys in the running game. We talked about before, he catches a little bit too much with his body, not enough with his hands, and he's not going to make a ton of contested catches. But let's be honest, that's really not what you're going for with this guy. David, were there any downsides of what you saw to Andy Isabella's game?
Well, I mean, I think you already mentioned it, really. I mean, It's just his his small stature really doesn't make him an asset when he's trying to block. He's just too small. And obviously, you have concerns about the level of competition. We did mention he did well against Georgia, but again, you know, the competition he was playing against regularly, you know, you're just going to see bigger, stronger, faster athletes at the NFL level. But with that being said, I still think that this guy has the skill set and obviously the rare speed to make a difference at the NFL level.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, John, what it comes down to is, hey, this guy has the physical talent. Now you step in and you say, do you have the coaching staff to be able to put him into the right position to really, you know, expound on that talent? Because you saw that a lot at UMass. A lot of times he was doing motions. They were finding different ways to get him away from the line of scrimmage because, like we talked about before, one of the downsides to this, John, is if a receiver or a defensive back comes up and gets really physical with him, a guy his size, that's something to worry about.
Yeah, if you watch some of his film, if he was to even just get jammed or even touched, like if the guy got just one arm on him and pushed him, he knocked him off his route and the timing would be bad. And that's kind of something that the NFL is big on, is timing. So if we can have a coaching staff or even a game plan, just a game plan that has him in motion or somehow finds a way to get the ball in his hands without having to deal with being jammed, it would help a lot. But if you don't have a spot for him, then there's no need to draft him. Being in the slot receiver role usually helps. Usually the slot receiver is off the line of scrimmage and is the guy that usually is the motion guy. So you can even, if you were to motion him and get the ball in his hands on a reverse, or even like the Chiefs' quick forward pass that they love to do to Tyreek Hill, stuff like that would make him really successful. But if you're drafting him to put him on the outside where Keenan and Mike Williams are and expecting him to get off the line and run that quick slant or go deep, he's probably going to struggle.
Yeah, he would absolutely struggle. But I think it's a player that, hey, you know what you're going to get with him. I mean, you're going to get a guy that brings unreal speed to the table. And right now it's just hard because you want the Chargers to fill bigger needs with, you know, their first three rounds of picks, even though you want the best player available. There's a ton of wide receivers. And, you know, if we're talking about a fifth or sixth round pick, I think we'd all get behind that because it's a guy that can come in and perform a role right away. He can be your deep threat receiver and a guy that's, I mean, probably even faster than Travis Benjamin. God forbid he goes to the Patriots. And then the Patriots get, you know, the fastest white receiver that I've ever seen, because that would just be great. You know, they wouldn't make anything out of that. But I definitely liked Andy Isabella. Unfortunately, I don't think the value is going to be there as it once was, you know, having him go in the fifth or sixth round. But definitely a player whose talent, even out of a place like UMass, transcends his school, and he'll definitely be playing on Sundays for someone. But I do want to get into another position of need. Probably a bigger need, but a later pick for the next one. We're going to talk about Ali Udoh out of Elon. John, sleeper pick for the draft coming up right after this. All right, John. Well, now it's time for your sleeper. And if you haven't heard of this guy, I don't blame you. I mean, they're sleepers for a reason, either because you don't know who they are, the national media hasn't really caught on to it yet. And that's the case for this guy in a lot of ways, because he's the guy that I didn't really hear of before John mentioned him to me. And after I got done watching the grainy FCS film of Elon, against tiny teams like Delaware and Furnham. I mean, you understand why people haven't heard from him, but I'm definitely glad I watched the tape because what I saw was a giant offensive tackle who has a lot of raw ability, John.
A lot of raw ability and a lot of strength. His legs are huge. There was an article that mentioned that his legs are tree trunks. He has a lot of leg strength. And another thing about him that I really love is if he gets on a defensive lineman, that guy is there. He's going to hold on to that guy and keep him within his little radius there. You're not going to get past this guy probably unless there's some kind of a stunt. I did see a few stunts where it kind of fooled him a little bit, but that's an IQ thing that you can teach. That's something that's easy to fix. That's a discipline thing. But he did struggle a little bit trying to move to the second level because he couldn't get a bigger hit on that linebacker if he went from the tackle to the linebacker. But the fact that he's able to get that lineman there and hold him and stay on his block and hold his ground because of how good his leg strength is was good enough for me to say I would like to take a shot on this guy in the fifth or sixth round just on the fact that he's got the size and the talent to do so. He just has to get the IQ better.
Right, and it's not a guy that we're saying, hey, this guy's going to come in and be your starting right tackle for day one. I mean, you're not getting that in the sixth round of the draft, basically, I mean, ever in the history of the draft. So, I mean, it's all good in perspective. And I think what you're talking about there, John, is a lot of what I saw as well. I mean, the wingspan on this guy is just ridiculous. I mean, he's hitting guys that are, you know, 2 or 3 yards away from him. His arms are so long. I do think that he relied on that a little bit too much sometimes. But going back to what you said about getting to the second level and getting to linebackers, I mean, the athleticism is not the problem. He gets to where he needs to be. He just needs to take a little bit better angle so he's getting more solid contact on those guys. Because you're right, if he gets his hands on you, his grip strength is ridiculous. I mean, if he grabs you, he's not letting go. And that was one of the things that impressed me. I mean, FCS competition or not, the amount of times I saw an edge rusher or whoever, maybe even a corner off the edge, just disappear into Ollie Udoh's wingspan was just ridiculous. I mean, he just absolutely swallowed up defenders in college. David, I know you watched a little bit of Ollie Udoh. What did you think if you could see through that gritty tape?
I could see a little bit through that gritty tape, but one of the first things that just jumped out at me was just the size. His frame, just from shoulder to shoulder, is phenomenal. He just reminded me of a huge sideways fridge. And I like what you guys said. When he gets his hands on you, if he locks in, you're done. You're not going anywhere. You're out of the play. He has a pretty good kick slide, has a decent rhythm on that, which, you know, I enjoyed. Obviously, you know, the concern, you know, he's coming from a small school, but he has a lot of really just good raw skills. I mean, he needs a little bit of work in the run game, just, you know, getting out to his blocks a little bit faster. And I think some of that's just going to come with coaching, but you know, you can't teach that size. And just, you know, he has a decent feel for the position, but he needs a little coaching on that. But as a seventh round type of pick, he has a lot of raw skills that make you think that he can stick at the position and that he can, you know, with some coaching, maybe be able to contribute to your team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And you're taking him as a developmental project for a guy that, you know, could be 1 year down the road, a guy that could maybe contribute later on in the year, because I know that's what John thinks. I mean, John sees the potential in this guy. And let's talk about, I mean, you're talking about a guy to replace Sam Tevy that could actually get a shot to get on the field this year, just, you know, with how much of that can be taught. Because one of the biggest things with him that I saw was the footwork issue. I mean, I don't think that footwork is going to work against better rush defenders. And I think that his punch needs to be a little bit stronger and he needs to stop himself from overextending, because when you overextend on really good pass rushers, they're going to hit you with that hunt move where they use your momentum. Just because you have that quick kick step doesn't mean it's always going to work against good defenders, because they're going to use that momentum against you and dip inside of you for a sack. But the foot speed is there, and that's what you'll take. You'll take the foot speed and help him work on that and refine that technique and have that to work on, because you can't really teach the getting back as quick as he does. for a guy his size. That's, you can't really teach that. That's just, you know, athletic ability, John. So, I mean, there are some things that he needs to work on. But as far as, like, the physical intangibles and the IQ, yes, he didn't have good football IQ. I mean, that's going to come with playing in an FCS. Sometimes he would down block and end up blocking no one as a guy kind of goes to his right instead of helping where he needed to help and letting guys get past him or letting guys come on twists and stunts get past him. But that's all things that, you know, you get him with the right people. Those are easy enough to try to fix.
They're easy to fix, and it doesn't take a lot of time to fix them either. It's either you get it or you don't. If you don't get it, you're not going to be in the NFL.
Well, that's the big thing, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't get it, you're not going to be in the NFL. That's just how it is. We've seen guys that have that issue. We've seen guys in skilled positions that have that issue. I mean, one of those guys would be a guy that had a lot of talent in Chad Johnson, who, when he went to the Patriots, couldn't remember a playbook to save his life. He didn't have to remember one in Cincinnati. So it's real easy to teach a guy the IQ, some little fundamentals that might make his game go from like a C+ to an A-, you know, just from one little fundamental trick. So if you just get an offensive line coach to teach this guy a few things, he can progress really easily, and you're not even having to risk a high draft pick on doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's the perfect candidate for a double dip. If you do wait till the second or third rounds to draft a tackle and you want to get another developmental piece behind that just in case, I think that's where a guy like this sneaks in there, because he definitely has the potential. You don't have a ton of faith in the Chargers offensive line coach, unfortunately, with what we've seen from them, especially recently. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about a fifth or a sixth round pick. I think that's great value for a guy like this, because I absolutely see on tape that this guy has the intangibles to become a starter down the road. And some players just don't even have that upside. And even if they draft another tackle, do you really want Sam Tevy as your swing tackle? Is whoever you picked going to be able to be groomed into becoming Russell Okung's replacement? I mean, unless it's Cody Ford or, you know, a really top tier player, you just doubt that. So you can't really have too much depth at tackle, because let's be honest. I mean, David, when's the last time the Chargers have had a good right tackle? I mean, it's been a long time.
I mean, I don't even remember the last time. I mean, honestly, exactly. It had to be on the line with Nick Hardwick, and I can't even remember his name.
Yeah, I mean, whether you're talking about, I mean, DJ Fluker, Chris Harrison, Joe Barksdale, Sam Tevy. I mean, there's just, the list goes on and on of guys that they tried out there and really didn't work out. So, I mean, the Chargers could absolutely use some help on tackle, and you can't really have too much depth there. He has a lot of problems. Hey, like, what's up?
Would you consider Jeremy Clary the last good right tackle?
I mean, you could say that, but I think we all had problems with Jeremy Clary even back then as well. But, I mean, compared to the guys who came after that who made you miss Jeremy Clary, I think that says more about it.
Because I remember when you were saying that, I thought about it, and I was like, I remember when we had Jeremy Clary, and even then people were like, oh, this guy's horrible. We need another right tackle. It was just like, what else do you want?
I know, and that was, I mean, on the last good Chargers offensive line that we've seen. I mean, really.
He moved to guard when we got DJ Fluker.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and even guard play, I mean, that hasn't been great since, like, Chris Dielman, who I actually talked to Chris Dielman this week, and I tried to convince him into coming back and playing for the Chargers, but he wasn't about it. And he said, sir, can you please just give my check so I can go home? And I said, yes. But anyways, there's one more guy that I want to talk about in this sleeper show. Coming up right after this. All right, guys, time to get into the last sleeper and last draft profile of this draft process. This has been a long process, and we've covered a ton of guys. I mean, I think we've gone more in-depth than pretty much any other show has as far as getting into these individual prospects, especially in how they fit with the Chargers. So this is basically wrapping up that, and this is another guy who I picked. I wanted to look for another guy, especially at a position of need, defensive tackle, that the Chargers could possibly target later on in the draft. And a guy I came across was Cortez Broughton, a defensive tackle out of Cincinnati. And when I turned on the tape, I mean, the first thing that jumped out to me was just a guy that absolutely jumps off the line of scrimmage with explosiveness. He has that quick twitch muscle that lets him get off the line of scrimmage. And unlike some of the other guys we've seen with good get-offs, he actually does something with it a lot of the times. I mean, he uses that to get push in the pocket. I mean, there's a ton of players we've seen that don't get any push, even though they're getting off the line quickly. A guy like Rennell Wren comes to mind. I mean, this guy can reset the line of scrimmage. But the problem was last year's, I mean, in 2017, they had this guy rushing off the edge. Last year, they had him playing straight up nose tackle in a 3-4 and didn't really use him, in my opinion, to the best of his abilities. But David, if you're talking about a late round pick, I mean, for having some of the same flaws as some of the guys projected to go ahead of him, I think he's an exciting prospect as a sleeper.
Yeah, no, I think he's definitely brings some great value in the later rounds with the concept of, you know, maybe grabbing a more, you know, high impact guy earlier in the draft. If this is your second, you know, interior defensive lineman that you're bringing in, then you like a lot of the things, a lot of the tools that he has. I mean, that get off, wow. When he gets through the line on that, he makes a couple of really special plays. I've seen him, you know, swallow up quarterbacks and just, you know, burst through the center on a couple of different occasions. I mean, he's, you know, seems like, you know, he's good for a couple of those impact plays. But one of the things he really needs to work on is getting through those double teams. I think he just had a lot of trouble doing that. If they anchored him on the double team, you know, he was washed out of the play. So he just needs to break through that. But, he, man, that first step is special.
Yeah, and I mean, and how many guys are getting drafted, you know, just specifically based off their first step and their physical tools? I mean, probably too many, but there's not many guys that you look at this late in the draft that are as physically imposing and have those kind of quick twitch muscles as this guy does. I mean, we're talking about, you know, later on in the draft, fifth, sixth, seventh round, he could realistically go in any of those rounds. But what you're talking about, David, at least as far as playmaking ability, I mean, look no further than the 18.5 tackles for loss that he had last season. I think that speaks to his, you know, ability to get down the line of scrimmage as an unblocked player. I mean, a lot of teams running run pass options these days and leaving a guy unblocked to have to make a read. And he was a guy that didn't get too far upfield and actually made teams work for it by, you know, breaking down, chopping his feet in the backfield and not getting too far up the field and missing tackles and also chasing down tackles from behind. That's how you put up those kind of tackle for loss numbers. Also tacked on 7.5 sacks. But I think, you know, one of the drawbacks for this guy and one of the red flags, if you will, was just his lack of playing time. I mean, his lack of productions in other seasons outside of this one. But before we go into kind of the cons, John, was there anything you saw out of this guy, a guy that's not being talked about a lot that you liked?
I loved his ability to exploit any hole that he thought was exploitable, if you will. Yeah. I mean, it sounds kind of weird to say it that way, but
no, I agree.
If there's a hole that he could get through untouched, he was going to take it and he was going to make the best of it. Even if he just got one hand on the guy, he doesn't make the tackle, but he slows the guy down, he did it. And something like that is huge because even in the NFL, guys who get through holes that are exploitable don't even make the play. They're not fast enough or they don't have the hustle or the angle to get there. He had all those kind of things. If he had better handwork, could you imagine what he could be off the block? I mean, this guy could be even worse.
Yeah. His handwork is the biggest issue. But, I mean, I think that you see the potential being there. I mean, he doesn't always play with the best leverage, but, hey, isn't that what we've said for every defensive tackle that we've talked about out of the first round? I mean, even Jerry Tillery got away with playing with a high pad level due to his, you know, physical frame and just kind of muscling people out. But, yeah, John, I mean, if seeing this guy as a potential rotational player who you can put at the three technique, which I think is a much more natural position than anywhere that he played for Cincinnati last season, you definitely see this as a guy who can penetrate gaps, can and do well enough in the running game, especially after an offseason of NFL workouts, to be a contributor as a late-round pick, which is, I feel like, you know, the only thing you can really ask for. Has the explosiveness off the line, has the ability to, you know, slither through gaps. But that is the big drawback, John. It's the handwork. It's the, you know, he has pass rush moves, but I wouldn't say any of them are great except for the bull rush, where at times I saw him literally just walk offensive guards into the quarterback's lap with ease. I mean, watch the UCLA game. I mean, just absolutely making offensive linemen look silly. But you can't always rely on that at the NFL level. You need to refine the hand technique. You need to have better placement for leverage in the running game. And he doesn't have that built-in length like some of the other guys have, that ridiculous length to lock out offensive linemen and shed them and stack them. That's part of the problem, John. And that's, I mean, a reason why a guy like this would go later, even though we've seen that with a lot of other defensive linemen that are still projected to go earlier.
Yeah, there's always a reason why someone with a lot of talent that looks good. I mean, hell, all these guys, even in the seventh round, looked good at some point. There's the Boise State quarterback, Brett Rypien, who's just predicted to go sixth round, and he was probably a top Mountain West QB, but there's a reason why they're down there. And for this guy, it's his hands. His hands are not the greatest thing in the world. He doesn't really – I would even give it like a C. I'd put it like in the D range for a grade on his hands. He's really got to work on that. And if he can get his hands going, not only can he exploit open holes, he can exploit a weak tackle that has bad form with the hands. I've seen players that have improved their hand work to the point where an NFL guy that you'd look at and go, that guy could block pretty well. He knows how to get his hand placements, and now this guy is just getting his hands on that guy's hands, and it's like a hand war that it leads to that defensive lineman now being in the backfield 24/7 during that game.
Well, and I mean, you can't ask for a better mentor as far as, you know, hand placement and using your hands as a weapon than a guy like Joey Bosa, who has some of the best hands in the league.
Oh, yeah.
And the best part and the biggest difference, John, with a guy like, you know, Cortez Broughton, he uses his hands, he throws moves, but he doesn't really go at it with a plan. With Joey Bosa, it's like he has plan A, plan B, and plan C. You know, he strings together pass rush moves and gets into his counters just about as good as anyone, which is why you see him never giving up and getting later sacks sometimes, because he just is constantly working those hands and working different moves to get to the quarterback. But hey, guys, it's draft day. So let's finish this up by going with who we think the Chargers are going to take with the first round pick. So this isn't who you want them to take. This is, hey, who's going to be there and who do you think the Chargers are going to pick 28 overall tonight, tonight at the draft? So, David, give me your pick for the Chargers first round pick. Who is it?
So my pick for the Chargers first round pick tonight is going to be Jerry Tillery out of Notre Dame. I can also potentially see Dalton Risner as well.
Yeah, I think both of those picks are realistic. I think both of those guys will be there at that point, especially Risner, who seemed to have slipped a little bit. But I think, hey, if that's the right tackle of the future, if your team is sold on that and he's the last tackle that you believe can be a starter in his first year, I think you have to make that pick. But John, who do you think is going to be the 28th overall selection tonight? I think me and you have the same pick.
I have to go with defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence out of Clemson. I would rather have Cody Ford, but there's no way he's getting there, and I don't think anyone's going to pull the trigger on Tillery till second round just because of the whole shoulder issue stuff. So I think it has to be Dexter Lawrence.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily want Dexter Lawrence. I mean, there's other guys. I mean, get Caleb McGarry out of my face right now. I mean, I hate that pick. We are definitely in with the lightning round on that one. I know that they have a great disdain for Caleb McGarry, and it can second us on that. I'm not the biggest Dexter Lawrence fan. But I would see why the Chargers would make that selection. I think he has the ability to possibly or potentially get some push in the pocket, even if he's never a dangerous pass rusher. And I just think that he might be, in their eyes, the best available option at that point. I mean, give me him over Rock Ya-Sin any day. Give me him over Caleb McGarry any day. And a few other players that I've seen the Chargers get mocked to. I swear to God, if they pick Daniel Jones with that first-round pick, I'm going to be upset as well. So, I mean, it's not my favorite pick, but I think it's a likely pick, and I think it's a realistic guy that could be there in that scenario. But, hey, guys, that wraps things up for our draft coverage in 2019. Really had a lot of fun with it, got deeper into the draft, and watched more college football than I ever have in the past. And I'm glad to be able to have a platform to talk to you guys, you know, a couple days of the week to get it out there, because it's a lot of fun going over, and I'm super excited to see what actually happens, because I think 1,000 different scenarios could play out. I mean, probably more like a trillion different scenarios with how much variance I see in this draft. But hey, thanks for always sticking in with us. Make sure to tune in tomorrow, because we will be going over the first round pick. We'll talk about some guys that didn't make it that we wish made it to the Chargers at 28, and talk about if we think the Chargers made the right decision there, whatever direction they decided to go. But until then, make sure to follow us at Locked On LAC. We're going to have draft clips from the draft. One of our producers has just the best ways to get those videos. So make sure to follow us on there to check all those out. And make sure to subscribe to us on Himalaya, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast from. And rate and review. We would really appreciate it. And make sure, once those Chargers get their pick in, sorry for the voicemails that didn't get to be played. Brian out of Westminster, we have them. Just draft is crunch time right now. So we'll still play those calls on the show. And make sure to call into the Locked On Chargers voicemail at 323-524-7924 to give us your reaction of the Chargers draft picks. But hey, guys, this is only the beginning. Now the picks come to reality, and we get to talk about who the Chargers have and what needs are left over at the end of it. But make sure to tune in with us tomorrow, guys, to get our thoughts about the Chargers first round pick. But until then, happy draft day. Take it easy and go Bolts.